Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. George Rickman on behalf of Appellants Committee to Save Franklin Shelter and Eric Shepard.
Can't hear you. Can you pull up?
I'm trying
to. The podium,
yeah, lift it up.
You can push a button and it'll rise.
To your right?
On the side?
On the side? I'm guessing. There it is.
Well, this is higher than the DCCA. George Rickman on behalf of Eric Sheptock and the Committee to Save Franklin Shelter. Franklin Shelter was a building owned by the District of Columbia in the northwest quadrant of the city downtown at 13th and, I believe, K Streets. Franklin provided homeless services as well as other additional services within two homeless persons in the District of Columbia. Back in September, the mayor took the extreme step of precipitously closing the shelter, casting many of the homeless residents of the district.
All right, so the district court dismissed your complaint.
Yes.
All right, and so the issue here is whether that was error.
Correct, and in part the district relied on, I believe, using the language, you can't, England does not allow you to take two bites of the apple. And we would argue that England, when San Remo Hotel looked at that issue of two bites of the apple, it was pretty much limited to issue preclusion as opposed to claim preclusion, which I think is pretty pronounced in this case.
But you see, before you even get to that case, if you don't have a proper England reservation, you've got a problem with respect to counts 1 through 11, at least, or 12, right?
True.
And where in your motion for stay in the Superior Court, to do an England reservation, you have to ask the state court to decide, you have to alert them to the federal issues and ask the state court to decide just the state court issues.
Well,
and as I read your motion, you ask the Superior Court to stay everything. So I don't see why that's a proper England reservation. And if it isn't, it seems to me you've got a problem with counts 1 through 12.
Well, first of all, explicit notice under England is not necessarily indispensable. Other courts have looked at, in fact, one court looked at the simple splitting of claims as providing adequate notice that plaintiffs intend to reserve their federal issues. Another important part of that was that the claims that were filed in the Superior Court were entirely germane to district law. There was a takings claim which was filed under the compensation regarding compensation clause of the takings issue regarding the homeless person's personal property and belongings that were lost during the closing of the shelter.
All right, let me just be clear. I understood your stay motion to say to the district court, because of new developments, we want a chance to go into the federal court and pursue claims under federal statutes, and we want you to stay the local case while we do that.
That's correct.
And the district court denied that motion and went ahead and decided not only the local claims, but your due process claims, substantive and procedural.
You mean Superior Court?
Superior Court. What did I say? Sorry.
District Court.
Beg your pardon. This is Superior Court. Went ahead and decided the merits of your case, which included constitutional due process claims and, as you said, your takings claim. Now, in your second amended complaint, as I read it, you have repeated those, the complaint in the district, federal district court. You have repeated those claims and added, at least in count 18, where you specifically say that since the closing of the shelter, these problems have arisen.
The Second Amendment complaint included issues that of ongoing harm, which would go to my second point that I would like to get to.
And so if I'm the federal district court judge reading the complaint, the Second Amended complaint, where do you make that clear?
It was clear in the additional factual allegations. I think in the motion to amend, we had to seek leave of court to amend the complaint. We made clear that these claims were subsequent to the closure and represented ongoing harms that were that happened since, not only since the closure, but were even ongoing at the time of the filing of the closure, and anticipated ongoing harm concerning the failures of the permanent supportive housing program and the continued placement.
All right. Do you have your second amended complaint in front of you?
Believe I do. I do recall that, though. And I think that in the second amended complaint, there were additional statistics that were added reflecting the specific makeup of of homeless population and the African-American composition of the respective placement of the remaining homeless shelters as compared to the Franklin shelter. There were also additional claims concerning the specific denials of under the ADA.
So in setting out those factual allegations and incorporating them in each of your counts, your position is that it was error to dismiss the entire complaint?
That's correct. Because it was made clear in the motion to amend the complaint that additional counts were being added to reflect matters that occurred since the closing. And in fact, we cited the Stanton and as well
why
as...
Why wouldn't the line be drawn exactly at that point? Namely, in the Superior Court, you had raised everything relating to the closing of the shelter.
That's correct.
And then in the federal complaint, what you wanted to do was to add counts relating to ongoing harms.
That's correct.
So why would it be improper for the district court at least to dismiss some of your counts?
Well, assuming that the England Reservation, we would be unable to reserve any claims concerning the closing of the shelter itself, the amended complaint reflects matters that are independent of that. And I thought we made clear, and under Stanton, I think they described or adopted the restatement second as attributed to the a reading of the DCCA law, case law on res judicata and units of prosecution, and looked to the time of judgment and things that...
Judge Tatel has raised the basic issue as to whether your motion for a stay was sufficient to make an England reservation. And then the Supreme Court in the San Remo case, which you discuss, says that even if you do, it doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't a preclusive effect by the state court judgment on some of your federal claims. And I'm just trying to understand where that line is drawn in your case.
Well, reading San Remo Hotel, it draws the distinction between claim preclusion and issue preclusion. I think San Remo Hotel makes clear that when the state court decided the due process issues or decided the issues consistent with that, then that would necessarily have a preclusive effect under issue preclusion for any federal claims that may follow. Though it specifically did allow for England reservations for claim preclusions, so, i.e. issues, factual issues or legal issues that had no impact on other federal claims that were raised. And on that particular point, clearly the FHA, the ADA claims should be allowed to go forward.
The state, I mean, I'm looking at it slightly differently. District court stayed its hand, right?
That's correct.
To allow a determination by the state court.
That's correct.
So that's really a Colorado River situation where there's no doubt that you can be precluded if the state court then resolves and says that it has resolved all issues and they reject, I thought they were rejecting your suggestion that you had distinct claims, temporally distinct claims in the federal case, because I think what they were suggesting is even in your complaint in the Superior Court, you were talking about ongoing problems as a result of the closing of the shelter. And I thought the D.C. Court of Appeals was saying all of the things that you raised and could and should have raised are gone. And once that happens, the federal court under Colorado River says the case is over. The federal court stayed its hand to avoid duplicative litigation. I don't see anything that's left. I don't see this argument on this temporal distinction, because you're just talking about the ongoing problems, which were clearly part of the case that Superior Court had before it.
Two issues with that. This DCCA opinion was pretty much limited to the, on the merits issue, to the due process claims. It simply said that you had a chance to amend the complaint to include these additional claims, which you didn't. Therefore, because you did not provide any reasons, we're not going to do anything with the denial of your motion to stay. That says nothing about the additional claims that were filed that we insist that follow and go on with ongoing under Stanton. And secondly, that being said, I think Colorado River misreads what Judge Walton actually said and did. In his statement, Judge Walton said he didn't want to do anything necessarily inconsistent with what the DCCA may do. That is language of a Pullman abstention in my mind, because Pullman is to avoid, if he were to read the due process clause, for instance, as requiring, as the HSSRA making particular requirements that the district provide X, Y, and Z, and then the DCCA turn around and say, oh, no.
The DCCA had authority to consider all of these issues.
They had concurrent jurisdiction, yes.
Right. And so under preclusion doctrine, all of them, the combination of them, put you in a hazardous position unless there's a temporal distinction, and I can't find one. All of what you did and should have raised was under the law before the Superior Court. And they said there was no merit. And the federal court stayed its hand not to find out what the state court had to say about a particular state law issue that would affect what they were going to decide on a federal question, but to avoid duplicative litigation. And under Colorado River, you're gone. Unless there is some break between the two complaints, and I just don't see it. I mean, to be honest with you, so you know what's bothering me, I don't see any clear break. I think all of these things are matters that were or could have been raised in the Superior Court, and you lost.
Well, on two points. First of all, I think Stanton provides the clear break. I think Stanton, when it starts defining units of prosecution and where preclusion begins and ends, it speaks to the issue is that to allow the district to continue to do absolutely nothing for the homeless, including Franklin, former Franklin residents, does nothing to advance the interests of the law. So I think that to take such a broad reading that in the absence, in light of Stanton, in light of the timing of the filing and the acceptance of the amended complaint, certainly addresses part of that issue. Secondly, I don't see where Judge Walton, in stating that he didn't want to do anything necessarily inconsistent, as the example I just provided concerning if he were to go forward and if he were to rule one way on due process and the Superior Court or the DCCA rule another way, that is the gist of what not doing anything inconsistent.
Duplicative litigation. That's precisely the Colorado River situation. I don't want to take this case and do what the state court's doing, and we might not end up with different results, so I'm going to stay my hand, which means, as a practical matter, whatever the state court does is the end of the question.
Well, what it also means is that, under Pullman, that I don't want to do anything the state court with this particular expertise in this particular area.
Oh, no, see, they're really very distinct. Once you concede that the state court had concurrent jurisdiction over all of it, Pullman doesn't work. If they had concurrent jurisdiction over all of it, then all we're asking is, did they have all of it? And it looks to me like they had all of it under notions of preclusion. All of it was there or could have been there. And the district court didn't want to take the same thing that the state court had concurrent jurisdiction over and run with the same thing. So it waited. But in a Colorado River situation, if the federal court waits, then the state court's dispositive.
In the typical Colorado River situation, that's true, but this was not a typical Colorado River situation. The district court stayed its hand to avoid doing something inconsistent
right,
in a reading of the district law. And that's
Well, I'm not sure what district law they were asking for, like in an abstention case. You know, tell us how to decide this question because we don't understand it. I just didn't see that.
I think it was clear. Any due process issue turned on the reading of the HSRA, the Homeless
the
Services
State Court Department. Had concurrent jurisdiction to decide the whole question on the merits.
But the district court had the issue before it, and it has an unflagging obligation
to
assert. We're
going around in circles. I hear you. I think we're going around in circles.
Let me just ask you a question. Assuming that there was a break of some kind between the events surrounding the closing and the behavior of the district subsequent to it, I'm curious about where you put count 12 in the latter category. You say that's 12 through 18, right?
That's correct.
But 12 is... I see your point about 13 through 18, but 12 is your due process claim, right? And your procedural due process claim was resolved by the Superior Court, and I don't understand how the substantive due process claim is any different. And I'm actually wondering whether that's a typo in your brief, whether you meant to just include counts 13 through 18.
I would... No. Argue that 13 through 18 are clearly right. A break right. from that. Count 12 was probably decided by the DCCA and would probably go out under San Remo Hotel under issue preclusion.
Yeah, okay.
Should
right.
be
Thanks.
Factual.
Okay, thank you. Good.
And I will reserve the remaining minutes.
All right. We'll give you some time in rebuttal. Thank you. Council for Appalese.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stacey Anderson for the District of Columbia Appalese. We would ask that the court affirm Judge Walton's decision dismissing this case based on res judicata and collateral estoppel. The focus of this morning's argument has been on the timing issue, whether there was, in fact, a break between the events in this case that would support filing a subsequent or successive case in the federal courts. And it's the district's position that there was not a break. In fact, just to the contrary, plaintiffs filed a proposed amended complaint in the Superior Court in March of 2009, in which they raised their Fair Housing Act, Americans with Disabilities Act, and DC Human Rights Act's claims. They presented at the Superior Court with a request for leave to amend to present those claims. Before the Superior Court could rule on that request, they withdrew their complaint. And in affirming
that was before or after the motion for a stay?
That was concurrent with the motion for a stay, Your Honor. It was a motion for stay or any alternative leave to amend.
But they did withdraw it, correct?
They did withdraw it, Your Honor, before the Superior Court could rule. And although the district filed a general objection to the request for stay and the combined motion for leave to amend, it was the district's position at that time that the Superior Court had concurrent jurisdiction over these federal claims, and there was no reason, therefore, for them to need to pursue those in the federal court.
But as I understand, the plaintiff's position is their Superior Court complaint was focused on the closing of the shelter and of the center and all of the rights that the inhabitants of the shelter had that were violated. And now on appeal, as you point out, says, you know, he had to file a takings claim there just on an exhaustion requirement under Williamson. The federal complaint is talking about things that happened after the closing only, and therefore it's entirely different.
Certainly.
Even though some of the same federal statutes that were mentioned in the amended complaint that was withdrawn are mentioned, but the amended complaint was not before the Superior Court.
Right, Your Honor. Again, the district would disagree with plaintiff's characterization of the record. Certainly, their initial complaint in the Superior Court was focused on the shelter's closing. It was filed very close in time to that actual event. But plaintiffs filed two amended complaints in the Superior Court, one in December and one in January. And those complaints did address
Didn't they withdraw those?
No, Your Honor. They didn't withdraw those. Those were actually before the Superior Court. Mm-hmm. And they did focus those complaints on the events that followed the closing of the shelter, and actually did argue specifically that these the persons who had resided in the shelter were being denied services that they were entitled to under district law.
Did they focus on ongoing harms?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. Yes.
They were not dismissed out. I mean,
no.
They were not, yeah.
And in fact, if you look at the D.C. Court of Appeals opinion, they just discussed those claims in great depth.
That's
in their
what
opinion.
I
so
when you look at the second amended complaint that is in the federal district court,
yes.
The first 12 counts are just a repetition
I would
of
agree with
what
that,
was
yes.
in the superior court.
Correct.
Why is there no merit to the argument that counts 13 through 18 are different?
Again, those counts are different than what was actually filed in the Superior Court, but those counts are the same counts that were in that March 2009 proposed complaint.
All right, but
so they
the
could
proposed
have been.
The complaint is a legal nullity. I mean, it was never filed and accepted by the Superior Court.
Correct, Your Honor, but the standard is not whether they were actually raised there, but the question is whether they could have been raised there.
Right.
And it's the district's position that they could have been raised there. Clearly, they could have been raised there just by looking at the face of that March 2009 proposed complaint. But when you also compare the proposed complaints and that complaints were actually filed with that July amended complaint in the district court, that comparison shows that really the only new factual evidence that was pled in that district court amended complaint was basic demographic data regarding the composition of the District of Columbia. Not even the composition of the inhabitants of the Franklin County shelter, but very general demographic data regarding the racial makeup of the District of Columbia population and the percentage of people with disabilities within the District of Columbia. From that information, they sought to extrapolate an argument that there was a disparate impact on those populations but as a result of the closing of the shelter. So that information was clearly available at all points in time during the Superior Court litigation.
The heart of your argument is under preclusion laws, I mean the whole range of them, these are matters that could have been raised and should have been raised. And part of the proof of that is they understood it because they put in, took out, but it doesn't matter because they were obliged to go ahead and present the whole case with respect to matters that they concede the Superior Court had concurrent jurisdiction over.
Exactly.
Well, isn't that true only if it's part of the so-called common nucleus of facts?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think...
Okay, and why can't you argue, as they do, that the events of the closing, I'm sorry, that the subsequent events, the discrimination in housing and shelter on the basis of race and disability that's occurred since then, although it's connected to the closing, does not technically arise out of it.
I agree with that, Your Honor, that they are two separate
yeah.
events. But they did challenge the post-closing events in their Superior Court litigation. The FHA and the ADA claims are just different legal theories to support the same factual allegations. They were arguing they weren't getting appropriate housing. They weren't getting the same medical services. They weren't getting... Now they've just come up with a different reason why they weren't getting them. It's because of discrimination now. But again, the evidence they rely on for that discrimination is just very, very basic demographic data, nothing specific to the actual facts.
So your argument is that had they not done that, they wouldn't have a problem here.
In
other words, they didn't have an obligation. Do I understand your argument to be that the plaintiffs here essentially submitted the same claim that they now seek to litigate here in counts 13 through 18 to the Superior Court, even though they weren't identified as
No, I don't think they actually submitted them. I guess the district's position is that they were available to submit them. They could have raised those claims had they chosen to do so. And
if they don't arise out of the common nucleus of facts, then they don't have to have submitted them, right?
The two but amended.
Isn't that correct?
Let me make sure I'm understanding the facts. Weren't there two amended
correct.
Superior Court that were not withdrawn that involved yes. ongoing harms?
Yes.
Well, that's
why I'm asking you the
that's
question.
That's what Judge Tatel's
asking.
I'm
sorry, I thought I had answered that.
It's too complicated. Let Judge Tatel pursue his
question. Well, no, but Judge Edwards' correction, it's a good one because that's why I asked you the question.
Right.
Are you arguing that these are, in fact, different, that the federal subsequent claims don't arise out of the common nucleus, but that the plaintiffs in this case, on their own, submitted them to the Superior Court for litigation in those two complaints? Is that your point?
My point is that they pled in the Superior Court two events giving rise to their suit in the Superior Court, the closing of the shelter and the subsequent denial. I agree that those are arguably two different nucleuses of facts, but they were both raised in the Superior Court litigation. Their complaints, their amended complaints, pled both events or factual predicates as the basis for their suit in the Superior Court. They allege the shelter shouldn't be closed, and subsequent to the shelter closing, we have been denied services we're entitled to. So I can agree in the sense that, yes, they're probably two different things, but they were both raised in the Superior Court litigation, and now they're offering three new legal theories to support something that was presented to the Superior Court.
So how would you distinguish Faulkner, which is cited in both of the cases? That's the automobile accident case.
Sure. I think, I'm hoping I'm remembering correctly, the claims, the FHA, the ADA claims, the DC Human Rights Act claims did not arise after the Superior Court litigation. It was available. Those violations, the alleged violations, existed. They were brought to the attention of the Superior Court and the DC Court of Appeals. They simply have repackaged.
Well, in Faulkner, the retaliatory cancellation of the policy, at the time the plaintiffs there filed their subsequent action, the court had not yet decided if they could have brought that in the Superior Court. Your point is that they didn't. Is that the distinction?
I think yes, Your Honor. Yes, and they
so your whole case turns on us being able to look at the two amended complaints and being satisfied that the allegations that are contained in counts 13 through 18 are in effect in those amended complaints, correct?
Not quite, Your Honor. Not that they're in effect there, but that they could have been raised. If you look at the factual, again, these are different theories.
Yeah, but
the information that they needed. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's why I asked you the question I did before. If, in fact, they're two separate events, the closing and then what happens subsequently, they didn't have any obligation to raise the second category of activity.
But they did raise them. That's my point.
That's why I keep asking you the question. Does your case turn on our looking at the two amended complaints and seeing in them essentially what they now attempt to litigate in counts 13 through 18?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
And you are, just to make sure I understand.
Certainly, Your Honor.
You're being so perfectly honest that you, I think you understate what I thought you were saying. That is, assuming arguendo that there are two nucleus of facts, so that if they hadn't raised the second one, then you might have had to argue differently. You're saying that they did argue both in the Superior Court, and even though the things that they say with respect to the second one are not perfectly coterminous with 13 to 18, under preclusion doctrine, doesn't matter. Once they put the second one in play, they are now bound by anything that could have been raised with respect to the ongoing.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
That's but you're not saying they could have alternatively withheld those claims from the Superior Court and litigated them separately here, correct?
I think that's a close question, Your Honor. If they had limited their initial complaint simply to the closing of the shelter and had not filed those amended complaints challenging the post-closing events, I think it would be a much closer question for the district in this case to say that those subsequent events that post-date the one initial complaint had to be litigated in the same cause of action. But in fact, here they did, as Judge Edwards put it quite well. They did raise that second nucleus of facts, and therefore it's the district's position that they're precluded from raising any claims that could have been raised with respect to that nucleus of facts.
Anything further?
I don't have anything unless your honors have questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant?
I can't help but restate the theories and the application of the law as defined in Stanton. And I took the time to jot down some language that kind of goes to the gist of litigation over the validity of a similar conduct occurring after the acts occurred, or in the initial litigation, or litigation challenging a rule or articulation of possible application of similar events occurring or expected to occur sometime in the future.
But you see, I'd like you to just focus in on this debate we were just having. Their argument, as I understand it, is that the core of the district's argument is that you, in fact, did submit the essence of counts 13 to 18 to the Superior Court for litigation. And what's your reaction to that?
The Superior Court complaints largely may have stated some facts regarding denial of services, but it was more or less describing failures of the district or the mayor to comply with a report that was required by statute. I don't think that there was any articulation of any theory or claim that there was complaints that, as a part of the harm theory, that they were being denied particular services. But it certainly was not or had not evolved or developed to the point with the filing of the amended complaint where the harms were to the point of reaching this.
Count 14, okay? It's an FHA claim, right? Mm-hmm. Discrimination based on disability. Now, was that raised in your Superior Court? Their argument is that was, in essence, raised in your Superior Court amended complaints. Is that not true?
There was no way the information was available at the point of filing the Superior Court complaints to raise the FHA and disability claim. And I think that was made clear through the numerous complaints about the district's failure to comply and the district Superior Court's failure to enforce particular discovery issues that were then being raised. So it would have been impossible at that particular juncture to ever raise any discrimination claims based on race or disability at that particular stage.
Is your point then the first time you raised those in the Superior Court was with the amended complaint that you subsequently withdrew?
That's correct.
Okay, sorry.
That was the first time after with the ongoing process of the litigation, the ongoing investigation of the facts, that it became apparent that there were available discrimination complaints. And that was when we put the district on notice that we were intending to seek the federal court's jurisdiction to litigate what became federal claims as opposed to the more germane claims of the takings and just compensation claims and the due process claims as to whether or not the HSRA had particular mandatory requirements, which would be turned on the application of state law and a state court reading on how it would interpret its own statute, as opposed to the federal claims, which were indicated that there was discrimination based on disability and race, and that was when the decision to file in the federal court and the federal claims went forward. So yeah, there were two distinct theories. And even more so, under the amended complaint, counts 12 through 13, that reflected the continuing pattern and additional harms where Stanton necessarily draws the line at the time the judgment is entered, as opposed from Drake, which looks to whether or not the facts were available at the time of the filing of the complaint. Stanton looks at once the judgment is entered, then res judicata ends and any facts that happened or any harms that happened subsequent to the entry of judgment is subject to a new lawsuit. And I think the district court was made aware of that. We argued Stanton in the motion to amend, and saying that these were new harms, these were persons who were continually being placed in far-flung areas of the city, persons with disabilities who were continually being denied access to services, and continuing harm that even continues to this day. We could even go downtown to Franklin Square, even go up any of the streets in downtown and see homeless still living in the street, even as hypothermia season approaches. So I think that the district would have the courts begin to apply a more truncated view towards when preclusion necessarily has effect, particularly in the instances of ongoing and continuing harm, because to make such an application would be to deny any former Franklin resident any redress for continuing ongoing harm that this district just continues to deny them any services, any access to any life-saving services. I think Stanton addresses that particular issue in applying district law and in reading district law consistent with the restatement second of torts that draws a line. and it's not an arbitrarily drawn line. It's a line based on once a judgment is entered, then any harms or actions that subsequent to that create new causes of action, and even or expected to occur after the earlier lawsuit. And I, again, reassert that we did, in fact, reserve our claims regarding the closure of Franklin Shelter. The district, the Superior Court was put on notice of that. The federal claims were not litigated over there. There was no determination or issue preclusion effect on the FHA claims or the ADA claims. And being that they are independent and separate claims, which again the district court was made well aware of, England and San Remo Hotel, or England applies under San Remo Hotel, and we reserved our right to federal jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.